Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 2021 Budget Public Forum for the Tompkins County Legislature. We are delighted to have your interest in our spending plan for the coming year and are glad to have you. You can see on the screen here a number of legislators joining me and our County Administrator, Jason Molino. My name is Martha Robertson, legislator from Dryden and chair of the Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee for this year. I would point out also that a number of legislators are watching on the YouTube channels, another way the public can watch, and that some of our legislators are also on that channel as well. So, and everybody will, all legislators will get all the comments tonight, including any comments that the public types into the chat function. So there are a lot of different ways for you to tell us what you think about our budget. I just wanted to say a few other words. Jason Molino will give you a brief overview of what the budget presentation, budget proposal is that he's presented to the legislature, and then we'll take your questions. Dominic Recchio is our communications director, and he's going to be monitoring and letting people in to the public screen as we go along, and he's doing it in alphabetical order. So if you're Z, you could probably go get a cup of coffee. The theme of tonight's the theme of the 2021 budget season is really wrapped up in the word uncertainty. And I know you'll hear Jason talk about a number of places where we have to make estimates, where we don't have the usual information to go on that we usually do. And this year is going to be, I mean, all you have to do is watch the news and see how up and down it is with respect to whether there will be any federal relief bill, in particular any relief for state and local governments and government services. That's sort of the big thing that we're waiting for, but we have to go ahead and plan without perfect knowledge of what kind of aid, if any, we might get from the state or from the federal government. So you'll hear some of those things, and that's really the climate that we're all making decisions in, and we appreciate your flexibility and your interest in this, and your comments really will make a very big difference for our deliberations. Everybody will have 3 minutes to speak. Each of you will have 3 minutes, and you can cover five topics or one topic, but you'll still have 3 minutes. Before we get started, I just want to also thank our staff, from Jason all the way through all the department heads and all the employees who've participated in the relief efforts and in responding to our pandemic and keeping Tompkins County as safe as we have been. Knock on wood, things have really, with the participation of all of you, have gone quite well so far in our county. In preparing this budget, Jason, Kevin McGuire, a number of other folks have done the heavy lifting, and we really are grateful for all of their work. And finally, a shout out to our information technology department that has kept all of us connected and informed throughout this remote Zoom climate that we're in. So thanks to everybody. With that, again, welcome. I'll turn this over to Jason Molino, and we'll look forward to all the things that you have to say. Thanks. Jason.
Thank you, Martha. Thank you for the introduction. And I agree, the common theme, unfortunately, is uncertainty. So what I'm going to do today is give a very abbreviated version of the budget presentation I gave back in September, I believe September 14th. It's really just touching on the high points of that, and then turn it back over to you for public comments. I'll share my screen here. As you can all see, that says 2021 budget form.
Looks good.
Here's kind of the end of the story at the beginning. One of the pieces of the budget that I think is a success of the budget, if there is such a thing during this time, is that we're still eliminating 47 positions. That's about a 6% reduction in the workforce. 18 of those positions are currently filled, and we have been able to find locations elsewhere in the organization to offer them a position if they so choose. and they want to stay employed by the county. So in this case, while we're eliminating 6% of the positions in the organization, we are doing so with no layoffs. So we are not contributing to the already high or three times high last year in terms of unemployment rate. We feel that's important to provide our employees with opportunities to continue to work with the county for the county if they want to. So a big hats off, I think, to our HR department, Lisa Holmes specifically, Laura Granger, as well as the department heads willing to accept additional staff to ensure that folks aren't displaced through this process. Revenue concerns, there's about a 9% decrease in sales tax under this year for budget. That's a pretty significant dip. 55% decrease in casino revenue, again, almost $1 million, and then also potential 20% decrease or reduction in state aid or greater. That's where your uncertainty comment comes into. We don't know what the state is going to do. Probably won't know what the state's going to do until mid-January when the governor's budget is proposed. The proposed levy increase is about a 4.97% increase in the levy, but the rate is only up about 1%, a little more than 1%. Primarily due to continued real property value growth the county, and that's a steady and a stable growth, which is good to see. There's also a $5 increase in the solid waste fee that's proposed right now. So the total impact, the average homeowner, which is about a $200,000 home, is about $83 a year in order to continue to maintain services. Again, major drivers, revenue, sales tax is down. Last night we talked to the legislature at the legislature meeting, and unfortunately, January to October sales tax receipts to date, Tompkins County is the worst in the state in terms of a greatest loss in sales tax year over year, 2020 compared to 2019. That's an 11% decrease over 2019. There is no county outside New York City that has had a worse impact than we have. There's a variety of factors that impact that. Nonetheless, we think that will carry into some decrease into next year. So that's why we have, again, a continued decrease in sales tax for 2021 budget. We expect that will get better, meaning it won't be as much as 11% moving into the next few months as college students continue to remain in the community, and the higher ed piece of the puzzle is an important part of our economy. But nonetheless, it's not good to be a leader in that sense, meaning the worst reduction in sales tax compared to the prior year. Tax, again, is stable. Pays for us, property values continue to maintain and their value and grow in the community, which is good. The revenue is down significantly, which adds to a large sum of decrease in revenue. Capital expenditure, the capital program, while we do have a reduction in the amount we are contributing to the capital program, we've still maintained a huge commitment of that capital program, one being strive to achieve a net zero emissions operation by 2040, and that's about a $30 million investment over the next 20 years. Labor costs, because we are decreasing the amount of payroll, essentially limiting the number of positions, next year, even though there's an increase in health insurance costs and some increase in retirement costs, we still see about a flat impact when it comes to fringes, which is good. And unfunded mandates, I'm going to talk a little bit about that. We have seen an increase in unfunded mandates, and I'm afraid, or concerned, I should say, that we'll see continued increase in unfunded mandates, particularly in public assistance, as we move forward into the future year and years as hopefully the economy recovers, but at this point looks as a slower recovery. State aid, again, state is experiencing 20%, they're experiencing liquidity issues, and they have been withholding about 20% of state aid payments across the board in a lot of different areas, probably June. TC3 is experiencing this, I think, even in a worse sense. And last night, the legislature approved an advancement of the 2021 payment as really in response to the state withholding its aid to address their own liquidity issues. This is going to continue to be a problem because the state's liquidity issues are about in the tune of $16 billion deficit for the current year.
Okay, Jason, excuse me. Your sound isn't great.
Okay.
You shut your video off, but you should be able to keep the screen up.
Maybe. I can do that. Actually, I don't know if I can do that.
Yeah, I'm not.
Let me try that. How about that?
Okay, we can see the screen. That's good.
All right, good. So state is awaiting a federal relief bill. I think this is a big unknown as to what's going to happen. We've been following the news as of recent. federal relief talks were off, they're on, we don't really know. And I think it's not, I hope it's not a method when we come to budgeting with this respect. But the state since June has been saying they want a federal relief bill, and they've been withholding 20% of state payments in anticipation of that. The governor has indicated very clearly that there is no relief bill. Expect significant reductions in state aid or increase in mandated costs. If we were to have a cut in mandated state aid that we receive from the state, it could be upwards of $5 million of additional revenue loss. That means one of two things. Have to make it up in an increase in the levy and or make it up with a reduction of expenditures elsewhere in the budget that we have discretion over. Workforce, again, elimination of about 47 FTEs, 6% of the workforce. Nearly two-thirds of the departments are experiencing staffing reductions. 8 employees that currently have positions are going to be offered other positions in the organization as their positions are proposed of being eliminated next year. Or we are achieving no layoffs, which I think, again, is a positive element of what we've been able to achieve with this challenge. Human services, in terms of mandates, we're seeing increases in human service costs, about $400,000 to $500,000 increase in it. Increases in safety net and a reduction in foster care aid. These are big ticket items. As you can see here, safety net is related to anticipated increase of folks that are going to need public assistance. These two are big ticket items. I don't foresee them changing in the near future, particularly if the economy is on a slow recovery. So that could be a carryover into next year, into the following years, meaning into 22 and into 23 before we start to see these numbers decrease. This county assumes 100% of 730. This is 730 are situations where individuals that are arrested are not for standing trial. So they generally have to be hospitalized of some sort. In the past, we had paid 50% of this, and the state had paid 50%. As of April of this year, the state passed all of the costs up to us. Again, a fairly large ticket item, very difficult to project. There is never any consistency with that. The only offsetting element of this is that EFMAP aid reduced our weekly Medicaid shares. EFMAP is, again, revenue sharing from the federal government related to the Affordable Care Act that took place almost 10 years ago now. While we have an increase in federal aid, the state many times has found creative ways to cut state aid in other areas, kind of offsetting these benefits. But right now, this aid helps really balance, I think, the increase in these other mandates. Sponsored agencies, you can see the sponsored agencies at the bottom of the screen. We asked for a 12% decrease in baseline budgets. That's what we asked for all departments, so that's understood. Every department submitted the same. We have some one-time OTRs that are included in there. T3's contribution remained flat. Total contribution to TC3 remained flat in terms of our contribution plus Portland County's. However, our actual share was a slight decrease portion of Cortland County residents attending TC3 increased a little bit over prior years. Contingency, this is a big jump in expense. Usually we have about a $900,000 contingent fund. Contingent fund is there for unanticipated expenses or shortfalls in revenue. $100,000 has been a pretty decent mark for us over the past few years. We've never exhausted it completely in a fiscal year. Because of the amount of unknowns, particularly the amount of unknown impact that state aid may have, we've increased or proposed increasing the contingent fund by $1 million. So while we doubled the contingent fund, and that's a pretty big increase, it's unclear as to whether or not it's enough. Obviously, if the state cuts all of our state aid by 20%, that's the equivalent of $5+ million reduction in revenue. So while if that were to happen, this would help buffer that a little bit. It obviously wouldn't take us cover the full amount of reduction. But I think it's a safety measure that's in place for us to be able to balance some unknowns that are coming. Again, unknown. Capital plan, as I mentioned before, continues to maintain a goal of achieving a net zero emissions of county operations by 2040. That's pushed back a few years from last year, which was in 2035. Recommends a decrease of almost the same, basically 11% decrease in the annual contribution, went from about $6.8 million to $6.4
$1 million. So it's about a decrease of $700,000. Contribution annually supports our debt service as well as other capital projects. We also propose using $8 million of fund balance and capital reserves over the next several years to offset some of those capital contributions on an annual basis. OTRs, or over-target requests, this year we had about $3.6 million. I recommended $3.1 million. 2.8 of it is 2.2 of it is one-time. Some of that is also rollover. Just so you understand, the $1.8 million of target recommendations are primarily all restorations, mostly staff restorations or contract service restorations. Keep in mind, the direction to the staff and departmental budgets was to reduce their local shares by 12%. In most of those instances, that was staffing reductions. In certain instances, I'm recommending restoration of them, and in certain instances, I'm not. But most of the target increases are related to staffing restorations. Some training and vehicle funding out of target into one time. The anticipation with this is that over the next several years, we'll slowly incorporate it back into target funding as the economy improves. And probably towards the end of the EBC sessions, before your first voting session, I'll give you a little bit of a breakdown of all of those different categories that may be incorporated back into the budget so you have an understanding of what target increases you may be seeing just from those alone. Workforce changes, as you can see, I'm not going to go through them all, and then some succession initiatives related to OTRs for succession planning of staff leaving, retiring, so on. Some of the agency requests here, most of these, if not all of them, are OTR requests. I'm sorry, one-time requests. They're all OTR requests. They're one-time requests. Again, kind of the risks, sales tax, big unknown factor. We received some, not unsettling news that we're, one of the hardest counties in the state right now as of a January through October comparison to last year. Known, this could go several ways. The economy could start to recover at the end of the year. It's to move in a positive direction, which means we should see growth year over year. It won't be what it is at 2019 levels for a few years, but growth is better than regression. The opposite end of this is that the prevalence of the disease continue to maintain. If we see hot spots pick up, it could have a negative impact on our economy. We just don't know at this point in time. So we budgeted a decrease in sales tax to buffer that. State aid, another big unknown. State, which I expect in mid-January when the executive budget comes out from the governor, I will expect seeing some sweeping changes in the way it operates, whether that's a decrease in state aid to localities or an increase in mandated responsibility. I would expect both. Don't know what that is yet. Public assistance, I think, is going to continue to maintain a high local share just because as the economy recovers, folks are left behind, folks don't have the resources. And they're going to need public assistance. The enterprise units, again, both airport and solid waste fund, having separate challenges for different reasons because their industries are still uncertain. Their industries are still rocky right now, both from COVID and also pre-COVID. Estimated tax cap by Spirit and solid waste fund, having separate challenges for different reasons because their industries are still uncertain. Their industries are still rocky right now, both from COVID and also pre-COVID. Estimated tax cap, I spared everybody that funky graph that shows the track of how you calculate the tax cap, which, takes about 25 steps. But odd year this year, 2 years ago we had what we called the Dryden factor that, had a tax cap increase of 10% this year, just the opposite for the same reasons. Tax cap, if we were to stay under the tax cap, would only allow us to increase the levy about $450,000, just reference, the proposed levy increase is $2.5 million. We had a large rollover from the prior year, but unfortunately that was negated by decreased sales tax credits to the town. So just a refresher on that. Many of the towns, rather than accepting the funding that they put in their general fund, they take the sales tax portions they receive to us and apply it to the county's tax rate in their jurisdiction. This is a reconciliation process that happens every following, on the prior year. And because sales tax is going to be under this year's budget, next year there's going to be a recalibration of this as well as a lower projection. So it's a little bit of a double whammy. That is why
why your tax gap calculation is so low. Again, recap here, about a 4.9% tax levy increase. That's about a 1% increase on the rate. No layoffs, even though we're reducing 47 full-time positions. Maintain support for the capital program. We have to watch the state aid closely and see what's going to happen with the state. Economic recovery will most likely drive sales tax growth. Changes, again, here's the 2 point. This is in millions, by the way. Levy increase going from 51.3 to 53.8, $2.5 million increase in the levy, 4.97. Here's the rate going from 631 to 638, about a 7 cent change on the rate per $1,000 of assessed value, a little over a percent rate increase. So put this in context, if your assessed value does not change, and your home is assessed at $200,000, your total increase in your tax bill will be $83 a year. Put the tax bill. So that is a recap, a very brief recap of the budget presentation.
Thank you very much, Jason. That's a lot of information packed into a few minutes. Sure. People know that the county has a whole budget page. It includes the longer version of the same slides. You just Google Tompkins County 2021 budget, and a lot of information is there, including the presentations, each video presentation from each of our department heads, and past budgets, and Jason's budget message, overall budget message as well. So if you want more information, head over there. We also have a YouTube channel that some of you are watching on tonight. And one of the acronyms Jason used was EBC. Those are Expanded Budget Committee Meetings. And those are all on the YouTube channel. Go there, Google Tompkins County on YouTube. OTR is another acronym. We forget, everybody doesn't know this language. It's Over Target Request. Target means kind of a department or an agency's set budget that they plan on from year to year. And if something that is beyond that, higher than that, that's an over target request. And there was a question in the chat box about mandates, unfunded mandates. When we get state aid, Jason talked a lot about state aid is one of the biggest question marks for us. It's also one of the biggest dollar amounts. That is not aid, just general unrestricted aid for us to support our services. That for county governments in New York is partial reimbursements for services that the state requires us to provide, such as some certain public health programs, such as safety net, food stamps, health heating aid, variety of foster care. All sorts of social services that we administer on behalf of New York State. They give us a partial reimbursement. That's the aid that is so far being held back for this year. And we're planning on that aid will be cut. And that's a significant risk in our budget. So those are some of the questions that came up. All right, with that, I think we can go. Dominic, you have our first speaker ready?
I do, yes. First, we will have Aloja Arwele, and after Aloja will be Annette Birdsall. So I'm going to click to allow Aloja in.
Thank you.
It's obvious that we are in a time of, in fact, I don't know if there's a word in the dictionary to describe the upheaval that we're going through, but over the past month, Cornell Cooperative Extension, where I had been leading the Energy Warriors program, a training program in a green energy for incarcerated young people, we've decided to move this into the community. And we have partnered with a reuse center, the organization that I don't think most of you need to have any introduction about. But the goal is to work with a training vocational program in green energy for people who are underemployed, people who are unemployed, and people coming out from in the reentry programs, which I have worked with, I continue to work with. Reuse has started. We have opened up a warehouse and a training center, which is located on West Buffalo Street 700, what used to be the Green Star Space. And the goal is to train individuals in the area of green energy, provide them with, the basic entry level, both the knowledge and the skills to go into these. And we have, in starting this, we have solicited information from OER, from URO, from all of the agencies that are involved in everything about green energy and sustainability. And the approach is all of the above. In other words, any resource that is in the community and any need that we have in the community, we want to be able to partner with anybody who has any ounce of experience, knowledge, tools, to be able to bring people into a green energy sector that has become, is going to continue to need a lot of, individuals to be involved in that. And our initial goal, having started with a pilot program right now, we're seeking to train 6 to 10 individuals. The goal is that these individuals who we also receive on-the-job training at Reuse, we will go into different employment situations. We have a work group that involves, stakeholders like region from the county legislature. We also have, Jerry Deeds and, with Diane Cohen and some of the trainers, bosses, that we all meet on Wednesdays to talk about this program. So Diane will be presenting a request for, just $40,000 that we would need to be able to pay stipend for individuals as they get involved in this training, because it's a stipend, dependent training. And the other training materials and certification that we will need. So I'm hoping that as you hear and as we engage in further conversation, I'll be reaching out to some of you. I'm glad to see, Michael Lane here. I'm glad to see Harry and the rest of you, Shannon Black, and, my friend Leslie McBean. I will be calling you, and Martha, you are not a stranger to program that I'm involved in. So I'm going to donate the rest of the minutes I have left to you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Thank you, Aloja. Appreciate your comments very, very much. And the next person?
Annette Birdsall is the next person, and after Annette will be Brian Eden.
So, hi, thank you. I want to thank you for all your hard work. I know that this is a very challenging budget season, and I'm here this evening to talk about how important the Community Outreach Worker Program is to the library. The library relies on our ability to contact Tammy and Natalia on a regular basis for the neediest in our community. During our reopening, we have seen an increase in unhealthy behavior outside the library to the point where immediate response was needed for community members and to allow access to our services. This need is actually greater than any that we have as a county library. Tammy and Natalia's ability to respond compassionately and quickly helps us alleviate calls to the police and truly provides a measure of safety and support for our downtown community. In better times, I was exploring the possibility of the library hiring our own social worker, as the need is so great for our community, our patrons, and our staff. The Community Outreach Worker Program is one of the best services that distinguish Tompkins County as a caring, responsive community, and I urge you to continue their support for all of us. Thank you.
Thank you, Annette. And the next is Brian Eden.
Next we have Brian Eden. I am here. All right, Brian. You can speak now.
And who's next? I'm sorry, Dominic. Next would
After
be...
Brian Eden will be Brian Cardon, K-A-R-D-O-N. I'm asking Brian to unmute on the back end. He hasn't unmuted yet.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. I've appeared here many times in previous years lobbying for OTRs for the EMC, and I thought I was not going to be here this year. But I'm here to strongly advocate that you support funding for the proposed climate action coordinator position. Some of what I say here will be a reprise of at least 12 years of lobbying the county legislature to proactively incorporate climate mitigation and adaptation strategies into its comprehensive plan, versus chair of the EMC Energy Committee and then as chair of the EMC. I was also appointed to the county's Energy Roadmap Steering Committee, the Energy Task Force, and now the Climate and Sustainable Energy Advisory Board, and have participated in a policy discussion with county staff on these matters. I talked frequently throughout this period of the climate crisis, often to blank stares in response. I believe that we've been gaining far more attention in the past several years, yet it is far too little relative to the needs. I compare the current public response to the climate emergency as somewhat analogous to the community perception of the threat of the coronavirus pandemic in late February and early March of this year. Many public health officials were far more concerned than the general public. The public was receiving mixed messages from authorities that the pandemic was a hoax, would suddenly disappear when the temperatures warmed, and it was no more serious than the seasonal flu. We now know without a doubt that none of that was true. But no one has suggested that the pandemic is an existential crisis. A soon-to-be-developed national strategy and a vaccine will greatly diminish its negative impacts. On the other hand, the climate crisis is an existential threat. Once the full onset of negative impacts is fully recognized by the community, it may be too late. Feedback loops unleashed by warming temperatures will be beyond human control. Social, political, and economic collapse will be well advanced. I understand that many may perceive this remark as an overstatement. Please don't underestimate these potential impacts. We're losing the race against time, and we have very little time left to act decisively. Due to time constraints here, I will not discuss the specific functions of this new position. I want to focus on the collaboration that the county and the communities had over a number of years on the statewide fracking ban, a soon-to-be statewide requirement for non-pipe solutions, the gas constraints, community meetings with major local developers such as Maplewood City Center, Frost, Travis, and Harrell Square to incorporate heat pumps in their projects that now has evolved into the business energy advisor position, and originating a statewide heat smart problem here with now more than 20 other community campaigns funded by NYSERDA. In this latter effort, the county was our fiscal sponsor, and Katie Rogel has served as a liaison to our board for several years. Let's not be penny wise and pound foolish. We must build on the numerous existing and future opportunities for collaboration by adding this position. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Exactly 3 minutes.
Next we have Brian Cardon. Following Brian will be Bryn Schmidt.
Hi, thanks for letting me talk. I really appreciate all the work you folks have done putting this budget together. I'm pretty new to paying any attention to local government, but I'm really interested and hoping to learn more. I was really pleased to see, I'll make this quick because the person before me said most of the things I wanted to say. I was really pleased to see that there's a commitment to reaching net zero emissions from government facilities. I'm just here to say that I fully support that, and I hope that we put as much money as possible, money and effort and creativity as possible to reaching that goal as fast as possible, both from government facilities and from the community. The other thing I wanted to briefly say is I don't know a lot about this topic, so I'm sorry if this is naive, but I was looking through the budget and I noticed I'm a big proponent of decarceration in general, and I noticed that there are $5 million allocated to the jail, and I was curious how many inmates that was. It's not a lot of inmates. There's 40. It seems like there's around 40 or 50 typically. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but it occurred to me that if you divide those numbers, you get about $100,000 per inmate, and I'm not a big fan of locking people up. I imagine nobody's really a big fan of locking people up. But I hope that for $100,000, it seems like there are probably other ways that we could deal with people who have broken the law. You could hire someone for $100,000 to follow them around. Maybe that's silly, but that's a lot of money to pay to keep somebody locked up for a year. So yeah, that's all I want to say. Yay. Thank you for putting money towards fighting climate change, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Brian. I'm going to break a rule and just quickly say that's for facility improvements at the jail. It's not about programs or anything. It's just an aged building, an aging building. So, and our next speaker, Dominic, is
Bryn Schmidt. I just wanted to acknowledge Emily Adams, put hers in the chat, and I'll send that to legislators via email as well. And after Bryn will be Carol Chalk.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm unmuted, I believe. All right, my name is Bryn Schmidt, and I live in Danby. I'm a mother and a grandmother, and I just wanted to add my voice to those who have supported the proposed new staff position of County Climate Action Coordinator. I'm feeling very grateful to Martha Robertson and Deborah Dawson for their proposal for making the work of addressing the climate crisis a priority locally. It's a global issue, and as Brian said, an existential issue, but of course our individual county actions have a big impact, and we have state goals of reduction of emissions that I'm excited that the county is looking at participating in those reductions. I'm really grateful that this issue is not being put on the back burner in such challenging times, and listening to the talk about the budget makes me realize how complicated it all is for you to meet these challenges, but I feel like this work of addressing the climate crisis is what is being required of all of us in this time to ensure a healthy, safe future for all of us. And if we are going to be able to hold on to a vision of hope for a time beyond our own, for our children and grandchildren and their children, we clearly need to be doing everything we can do to address the climate crisis. As the visionary poet and activist Joanna Macy once put it in a poem in which a person of a future generation asks her grandmother, "What did you do when the seasons themselves began to fail?" And I just want to thank you all for taking this opportunity to think about becoming good and life-sustaining ancestors to the future generations. Thank you.
Thank you, Bryn.
Now we have Carol Chalk, and following Carol will be Deborah Dietrich.
Hello, Carol, former legislator.
Thank you. Thanks, Martha, for recognizing that, and it's good to see all of you again. I have taken an opportunity to look very briefly at the actual budget book, and I have a few things to say. This is definitely the year to exceed the budget cap. It's a stretch for many of us, but many people are hurting way worse than middle-class retired people like me. If you can find a way to provide additional forbearance to help renters and homeowners stay in their homes through this terrible era, please explore ways to do that. And much as I'd love to see the county's own employees stay with the county, please prioritize programs for those who are hurting the worst. So I support your decisions in that regard. However, although it's hard to spend any new money right now on any new things, it's now obvious that we can no longer put off climate action. Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can no longer put off climate action. I'm proud that Tompkins County has been a climate leader in the past, and we were able to do that because we took the extensive steps of funding positions to help us do that, specific positions, not positions within other departments dedicated to a host of things that seem to become more pressing. Please fund the Climate Action Coordinator. We've had active funders for our energy activities in the past. When we've stepped up, we have found funders who've stepped up more. And having a dedicated person to do that, I think we should be able to find additional support should we make our commitment clear. This is the year also to emphasize social services and rely on our fine planning department to get us through the crisis. This is the year maybe to decide that we can live with a few potholes or delay some of the road maintenance. I know it's important and I know it gets more expensive when we do it, but this is a year for people, not for physical items. When so many fewer people are on the roads, out and about, this may be the year to keep the road patrol flat or slightly down. Because there are other needs that are larger.
Carol, about 10 more seconds.
I note that they're slated for about a tenth of a percent to stay within their budget. This is a terrible year to decrease the sponsored agencies 12%. Legislators, this is also the year to look very deep into the budget. Look at those back pages, the ones with the contracts, and on every single expenditure, ask who benefits and who pays. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carol. Good to see you.
Next, we have Deborah Dietrich, and Deborah will be followed by Diane Cohen.
Good evening, virtually, everyone. it's a miserable budget year, and I thank you all for your fortitude. This is the worst I've seen in my 40 years locally. In spite of that, I'm here to ask you to vote for Rich John's over-target request for $40,000 for the RESET program at Reuse. OAR is part of the Healthy Workforce Consortium, along with the Alcohol and Drug Council, Challenge, the Chamber of Commerce, and others, funded by the U.S. Department of Labor. Our goal is to expand workforce participation by individuals in recovery from substance abuse disorder. As many of you know, this includes many of OAR's clients returning home from jail or prison. Over the past few years, OAR has worked closely with Finger Lakes Reuse and has placed several of our clients in their apprenticeship program. But RESET, the program that handles a lot of that, has not been able to offer as many positions as we need. And this over-target request would help address this problem. One of the reasons OAR appreciates working with RESET and Reuse is that we share a common attitude towards those returning home, one of respect and hope. The huge and growing divide in income in our nation and in our community, and one that unfortunately we can project that divide to continue to grow, has eroded one of our commonly held beliefs, that individuals can improve their economic outlook and options through hard work and the hope that this will improve our children's future. This downward spiral will continue and creates growing numbers of those without hope. OAR and Finger Lakes Reuse seek to provide these employment opportunities and restore a sense of purpose and hope to people who've been left behind already too long. Thank you.
Thank you, Deb, and thanks for your service as a county legislator as well. Quite a long time ago, but you're still
40 years.
You were just 10 when you started.
Oh, right. I helped build the jail, so the building is not the only thing that's aging.
We understand. Good to hear you tonight.
Thanks.
And Diane Cohen, and then who's after Diane?
After Diane will be Emily Adams, if she's still available. If not, I have her notes captured for you all separately.
Thank you.
Great. Okay. Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for this opportunity. I'm Diane Cohen, Executive Director of Finger Lakes Reuse. I'm speaking in support of the $40,000 over-target request for apprentices at the Reuse Warehouse and Job Training Center. Thank you, Deb, for your kind words about that. We've entered into what may be the greatest collective challenge of our lives and also possibly the greatest opportunity for positive, lasting systems change. Demands for human services are increasing while support for the same programs are diminishing. And we must focus on those in structural generational poverty cycles, especially systemically oppressed Black and Indigenous peoples of people of color. The impacts of this pandemic are not fully felt yet, but the value of materials is clearly shifting. We began this year with 49 living wage employees and have expanded twice since April, including our temporary pilot at 700 West Buffalo Street, the Reuse Warehouse and Training Center, which is coordinated by Dr. Aloja Arawele with Cornell Cooperative Extension. I'm proud to say that we now employ 81 people, and we are still hiring and bringing on trainees. We have strong and growing relationships with local employers who are hungry for a trained workforce. Currently, Reuse is attempting to harvest and handle unprecedented volumes of our community's valuable material excess. Without support, we add stress to our environment and lose out on helping our most vulnerable neighbors right now. Last year, we earned more than $1.5 million in sales and service revenues, covering 80% of our total organizational expenses. But the impacts of Reuse go way beyond dollars. I believe Reuse can and should be a revenue-generating cornerstone of local economies, a key player in the efforts to reduce emissions, energy and resource consumption, all the while creating jobs, sharing our values of safety, respect, and resourcefulness, and providing skill-building opportunities, which in turn can generate a sense of pride, hope, and self-confidence. Finger Lakes Reuse exists because of Barb Ekstrom's vision for a reuse center in Tompkins County as part of the County Solid Waste Management Plan more than 20 years ago, and we have been grateful for the committed support we have had over the years. However, in 2021, the county's annual operating support for Finger Lakes Reuse has been wholly eliminated from the budget since it was sourced out of recycling revenues, which continue to remain depressed. Finger Lakes Reuse is a social enterprise experiencing more than 25% annual growth in its retail operations over the last 12 years and has leveraged $1.7 million in grants and contracts, not including county support. Additionally, the county investment has helped leverage $9.7 million in merchandise sales, as well as affordable materials for countless thousands of county residents, poverty relief for hundreds of families through our materials reuse materials access program, and highly flexible job training opportunities for those who are unemployed, underemployed, and are difficult to employ. I would be glad to further discuss and provide safe distance tours of our pilot reuse warehouse and training center at 700 West Buffalo Street. My email address is diane@fingerlakesreuse.org, and I look forward to talking more soon. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Diane.
Next, we have Emily Adams. Following Emily will be Helen Kaplan. Emily, looks like Emily is going to forego the speaking time. I've saved her notes. So we'll go ahead with Helen Kaplan. And following Helen will be Irene Weiser.
Is Helen there?
It shows she's on. She's not muted, so we should be able to hear Helen.
Helen, can you hear me? We can't hear you if you're talking.
It looks like we're not able to hear Helen. I'd encourage her to put the notes in the chat, and I'll capture that for you all, or chat directly with me if the mic gets working in the future.
She just said her mic isn't working. Okay.
Okay, so we'll bring in Irene Weiser, and following Irene will be Margaret McCasland.
Okay. All right, Irene, thank you. Hello.
Yeah, thank you. Hi. So first of all, hats off to Diane and all the great work she's doing. I wasn't planning to support that OTR, but I absolutely do. It's wonderful work, and how could you not support it? I'm here tonight to speak in support of the OTR for the Climate Action Coordinator. And I know that many others tonight will speak about the urgency of climate change and our need to respond and the county's leadership role on climate issues over the year. But I want to speak to you tonight about something I know is on all of your minds, the bottom line. Is this really something the county should be spending money on in these challenging financial times? And my answer is a resounding yes. 5 years ago, in response to the gas moratorium in Lansing, this county, along with TCAD, this county legislature, along with TCAD, impaneled an energy and economic development task force to try to resolve the tension between energy issues and economic development. Back then, I made the case that embracing the energy challenges we faced would attract new development and grow our economy while showing what was possible. And here are just some of the developments that have happened since then. Tompkins County led the state on rooftop solar installations and installed the first community solar project in New York State, creating over 100 good-paying jobs. Tompkins County was selected by NYSEG for a variety of new energy initiatives, including installing smart meters, battery storage, and advanced residential electrical vehicle charging, as well as grid monitoring projects with Cornell, collectively several million dollars of investment in our community. Tompkins County led the state and perhaps the nation in developing the concept of non-pipe alternatives. Non-pipe alternatives, as part of the state's gas planning proceeding, are becoming the policy now for all utilities. And granted, it took way longer than we had hoped, but NYSEG's non-pipe alternative RFP will be bringing over $9 million to residential and commercial customers in Lansing while cutting our greenhouse gas footprint. Especially exciting to me is that one of the county's largest manufacturers will be installing energy efficiency equipment from a new business in the Southern Tier, a business that won the Governor's 76 West competition in 2017. And that competition is coordinated out of the REV Business Center that, as you know, is a business incubator in downtown Ithaca that has successfully launched many businesses. Solar Tompkins and HeatSmart Tompkins model programs started here and were supported by the Tompkins County Legislature, have been adopted by NYSERDA, and now have programs across the state. Again, these programs have helped to develop policy and create funding streams that resulted in local jobs, and have developed programs to serve low-income residents, and most recently have developed workforce development program that trained around 40 people in new heating and cooling technologies.
Can you wrap up, Irene?
We need the collaboration between staff, legislature, and our activists more than ever. To enact the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act, the state is undertaking a multi-year planning process. Over the next year, they'll be formulating proposed policies on a variety of topics, including energy efficiency, housing, concerns for low-income and vulnerable population, policies for addressing transitions in communities to workers from fossil fuel when fossil fuel plants close, addressing how to transition energy-intensive manufacturing, and more. All of this, we have a voice that we need to lend to the state in these policy decisions to protect the interests of our residents while also helping to set a course. Bottom line, just 5 years ago, we were discussing the environment during the versus the economy. The conversation is different now. The environment is the economy, and we need to be part of it, and we need to help set policy in New York State. I'll send the rest of my comments. Sorry to run over. You know I'm passionate about this, so thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, Irene. All right.
Next, we have Margaret McCasland, and following Margaret will be Matthew Dankinich.
Good evening. Even though I'm trained as a global warming educator and I'm a faith leader whose work focuses on climate justice, I will simply state what is now obvious to all of us. We have to do as much as possible, as soon as possible, which is why I appreciate the word action in the name of this position. I applaud the position as proposed for both the work a climate action coordinator can accomplish here in Tompkins County and for the many ways that what we do in Tompkins County can be leveraged to have impacts far beyond our borders. And Irene just listed many of the things that have been done in the last decade or so in our county that have had impacts on the state and federal level. Personally, as a senior citizen on a limited fixed income, I want to particularly stress the importance of Tompkins County having a staff member who can help make sure that programs supporting an ecological energy transition include people on all income levels, including renters. I also want to reinforce the impact this position will have both within our county and beyond our borders. And the job description lists the many kinds of interactions we would have with other counties on the state level, on the federal level, This is intended so that we can be informed by of what's going on and also advocate for what should be going on. But again, I want to stress that this is global warming's a global problem, and Tompkins County is in a position to leverage these resources. We've already had a disproportionate impact on energy policies around the world, with a special shout out to Cornell Cooperative Extension for helping model a lot of these great programs. And also, our impact has gotten leveraged even further through the contacts Tompkins County residents have with governments, NGOs, businesses large and small, and informal programs all around the planet, often through our three colleges. I want to give a special thank you to Martha and Deborah for proposing this essential position, which can link our many local resources. And I hope that our county can bring this to fulfillment through careful discernment of priorities, such as I've been hearing this evening, and creative budgeting. So thank you.
Thank you, Margaret.
We have Matthew Dankinich, followed by Michael Ellis.
Hi, everyone. Good evening, and thank you for giving me the chance to give my comment in this way. I really appreciate it, and I also just want to say that I appreciate everybody's work during this pandemic and keeping everybody as safely and healthy as possible, keeping our numbers as low as possible. My home county in Pennsylvania has not been as lucky, so I do really appreciate it. I'm here tonight just to speak to the effect of the work of Natalia and Tammy through the Community Outreach Worker Program. I myself am an outreach worker, community health worker in Tompkins County. I work for Reach Medical, based in Ithaca. I'm also a resident. I live in the city of Ithaca, right in the heart, of much of what goes on here. When I first started, at Reach, it was made very clear to me that Natalia and Tammy would be quite key, to getting my work done, being able to connect with people that, I might not otherwise be able to connect with. And in fact, their work has become huge in my own work. Because of them, I've been able to enter the jungle encampments. Because of them, I've been able to, work with people to connect them with telemed once a week, to, you know, bring, medical care, thanks to the state's kind of loosened regulations, bring that straight to the people who need it the most, when and where they need it the most. They also provide an incredible amount of community connection. You know, being able to follow up with patients that easily, I think, ends up preventing a lot of reliance on other kind of sources that are cost a bit more. You know, kind of more connection with your primary care provider leads to less reliance on emergency resources. I also think as the national conversation switches to thinking about, you know, alternatives to policing, Ithaca has always been, I think, at the forefront of that, in terms of at least having this program. And I'd really like us to continue having that option for all of our local organizations, for just people in the community. As someone mentioned earlier, you know, this next year is the year for the people, and I'd appreciate just everyone's thoughts and actions in keeping it. So thank you all.
Thank you, Matt.
All right. We have Michael Ellis, followed by Natalia Kowalich.
Hello, everyone. Nice to see you all.
Can you speak up a little, Michael?
Sure. Yep. Is that better, Martha?
That's a little better, yeah.
Okay. I just want to thank you all for your leadership at this time. You know, the word of the night is uncertainty, and I can only imagine what an impossible task it must be to be making decisions that impact so many people with so much uncertainty facing us all. But I do thank you for your leadership with that. I know that you all are up to the task, and you make this a community that I'm proud to live in and work for. So I'm here tonight to ask you to please support the OTR request for both the Dispositional Alternatives Program, or DAP as we call it, and the Community Outreach Worker Program. Both of those programs are cost-effective, and they both have exemplary outcomes upon which the community depends. And as people have spoken to already this evening, the times ahead are not likely to be any better than the last 6 months have been. If anything, they're likely to get more intense, and more people are likely to lose what foothold they have had on their own safety and security. So these programs are going to be needed more than ever in the coming year. DAP has been a resource for families in Tompkins County for over 40 years. The primary goal of the program is to prevent children from being separated from their families. There are, as I'm sure you know, life-changing costs to youth and families once a youth is removed from the home, and there are significant costs to the community as well. DAP is a preventive service that costs about $9,000 a year per child who participates in it. But once they are removed from their home into care, it can cost 4 to 5 times that, depending on what type of foster care they're placed in or an institutional setting. And then if they're incarcerated, it can be up to 33 times that amount. So over the past 10 years, DAP on average has a 96% success rate with keeping youth with their families, which is a tremendous outcome, both psychologically and developmentally for them, and it's a financial win for the rest of the community. And the community outreach worker program, I'm touched and grateful for the people who have spoken on behalf of the program already. We know that this is a program that many, many people throughout the community have come to both value and rely on, not just the hundreds of community members who benefit directly from Tammy and Natalia's services. And these are residents who are some of our most vulnerable. They are often facing significant medical and mental health risks, addiction, poverty, and uncertainty around food and shelter is a constant for them, not just COVID.
Can you wrap up?
Oh, wow, that went fast.
Yeah.
So others will speak to it. I know you that you all are very familiar with this program. And yeah, the last I'll say about it is that in addition to the usual services, Tammy and Natalia have been incredibly responsive and creative in how they're serving the community during the COVID crisis. So thank you for your consideration of the OTR request for both of those programs.
Thank you, Michael. Natalia. And then who's after Natalia?
After.
Couldn't hear you, Dominic. Who's next?
After Natalia will be Dr. Paula Iwanide. Natalia should be allowed to unmute now.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, welcome.
Good evening, all. Thank you for being here. I would like to just share why I think the community outreach worker position is really important for our community. I've been in this role a little over a year now after a pretty lengthy history of working in different capacities around town, nonprofits. Before I was with Tammy, I was working as a linkage and prevention specialist in 6 of the maximum security prisons in the Elmira Hub. Prior to that experience, I was a care manager at Southern Tier Care Coordination. And prior to that, I worked with severe and persistently mentally ill adults at the Mental Health Association of Tompkins County and with children. Of all of the jobs I've held in the social work field, I feel like this is by far the most important job because we hold everything together. We stitch organizations together so that we can have a more team approach to caring for a person than the individual siloed services that don't communicate with each other. We offer compassionate and effective problem solving for people who are in crisis. Our program is an alternative to contacting police when situations arise where we can de-escalate the situation. We offer de-escalation training to different organizations and agencies in Tompkins County. And programs like ours help keep homeless and mental illness and other chronic health conditions from being criminalized. We take a human approach to helping people, and as somebody mentioned before, there's been an uptick in mental health crises and conditions due to the isolating nature of COVID and the pandemic. So our services are very important, especially because many people we work with on the streets, in the commons, a lot of people don't have phones, don't have Wi-Fi. They're not sitting in here on this Zoom call right now. They don't have access to the same technology and participation in society than the level we're used to. And a big part of my job is making sure connections are still happening despite those challenges, making sure people don't get lost in all of the updating, changing systems that we have. So in summary, we've worked hard to develop relationships with folks in town and to develop the rapport that you need when you're working with a vulnerable person. People who are suffering from various different chronic health illnesses, substance use disorders, homelessness, those are the people that we're keeping connected to county services and programs and continuing to help them find their best way, meet their goals. Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Natalia.
Next we have
Go ahead, Dominic.
Followed by Ruth Yarrow.
Good evening. I'm going to speak to the criminal justice coordinator position and its de facto elimination. I'm going to read part of a letter written, signed by several of us who have been working with the criminal justice coordinator of Tompkins County, myself, Professor Mark Wheelies, Professor Michener, the director of Ultimate Reentry Opportunity, the director of OER, and three judges have signed this letter, the Honorable Scott Miller, Rick Wallace, and Joe Cassidy, as well as the district attorney, Matthew Van Houten. And we express our gratitude for the enormous amount of work that the legislature and the county has done to meet the unprecedented challenges of COVID, and know that we are in an unparalleled economic crisis. At the same time, we must all respond to this crisis in a way that does not unravel or reverse the significant gains we have made over the past few years. We're particularly concerned with the de facto elimination of the criminal justice coordinator of Tompkins County position beginning in January, and we write to offer our expert perspectives on the widespread impact this move will cause and to propose a solution that will retain the position and save the county money. But first, some background is in order. You may remember that the 2017 CGR study, which you commissioned, repeatedly emphasized the need for greater coordination, improved data keeping, results-based accountability, and oversight over progress on recidivism and RBA outcomes, particularly among organizations that were community stakeholders in improving criminal justice outcomes. In response to this report, the legislature wisely decided in 2017 to invest in alternatives to incarceration rather than the jail expansion, and it established the criminal justice coordinator to do many things, and I want to outline some of the accomplishments over those past 3 years that coordinator has realized, which include establishing baseline data on recidivism, which we didn't have before. I won't tell you how difficult it was as a researcher to find data prior to this position on anything related to criminal justice, helped numerous nonprofits and governmental entities establish performance measures and track their progress towards those goals, brought stakeholders together that were previously working in silos to identify gaps in services and coordination, chaired the Sajati Committee and brought the voices of those most affected by incarceration into the conversation, led a group of representatives from probation and DSS to attend Georgetown University's Reducing Racial and Ethnic Disparities in Youth Incarceration, and worked and are currently working with the Ithaca High School, Newfield, and probation to reduce racial and ethnic disparities in PINS cases.
Please finish up, Dr. Amiri.
Our proposal is essentially to save this position and not commingle it with the Chief Equity and Diversity Officer position. We propose that an over-target request be made at the expense of $60,000 per year, allowing the county to save the benefits and part of the coordinator's salary. And we propose that that the criminal justice coordinator position be established under a community-based organization like OER and UR or URO in
Thank
order
you,
to
do this important. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Next, we have
Dominic, you're going out again. But I have Ruth.
I'm having some technical issues. I'm sorry. It's Ruth Yarrow, okay. Followed by Sarah Collada.
I will be brief. You've listened a lot. I've spent my career being an environmental educator, Cornell trained, including university level and the Cuba Nature Center. On my spare time, I've worked on peace and justice issues. I want to urge you to support two positions, the County Climate Action Coordinator and the Criminal Justice Coordinator. I know you're up against budget, but these are very important. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ruth.
Next, we have Sarah Collada, followed by Tali Mugambe, and Tali will be our last speaker for the evening.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah Collada. I live in the city of Ithaca, and I'm honored to have been appointed and serve on the county's Climate and Sustainable Energy Advisory Board. I also work for a developer of a large developer of clean energy projects, Siemens Smart Infrastructure. And I'm in favor of the county creating a climate action coordinator position for a three-year period. There's a lot that's uncertain in our futures, but one thing that is for sure is that New York's Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act is moving forward. And there is money behind it because there are authorities, New York Power Authority and NYSERDA are two of them, that are self-funding. They're not subject to the same kind of cuts in state aid that we've been hearing about so much tonight. The CLCPA is already making a big impact across our state and community. National and international companies are building large-scale renewable projects on open land and on brownfields, and that's going to accelerate. And we know that that's happening in Lansing and Groton already. State and local carrots and sticks, the regulations and rewards, are being developed now that are going to drive energy efficiency and electrification. Electric vehicles, charging infrastructure, energy storage, microgrids, those are all driving up a high demand for workers from entry level to highly skilled in the clean energy sectors. And happily, I'm glad to say that improving equity and inclusion is baked into new state climate regulations and funding. Our county workforce development needs need to be informed and leverage these realities in the clean energy sector. And there's funding available for that from private and government sources, both state and federal. But it is a lot to parse through the details and coordinate ourselves to take advantage of that. And that's something that I spend hours on every week, both as a case board member and in my professional capacity. And that's why I think it's so important that the county have somebody who is really dedicated to understanding what is happening week by week at the state level and hopefully soon at the federal level, and being able to make our voices heard and also take advantage of what's going on. We have an opportunity to benefit and a risk of losing out if we don't have that staff resource. I think others have said we've worked really well together in the past, and now it's time to step up again by using some of our reserve funds for this important position. I am really confident that it's going to yield a high return on investment. We're going to get a staff person who will be able to bring in money. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Sarah. And Tali.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to first just say thank you to everyone staying on the call and to you legislators out there dealing with the challenging work that you're doing, keeping your head up and keeping all the people in mind as you move through this crisis and this time. I wanted to first speak about the transitional. Sorry, I'm out of breath. I've just been running around with the kids. the transitional employment program to be housed, what is already existing at the Finger Lakes for use. And as I see it as the director of the Ultimate Reentry Opportunity Initiative, transitional employment is essential to the helpful transition for folks coming out after incarceration. And if the county is at all concerned with reducing and eliminating recidivism, we need to invest in this program. Main reasons why the Finger Lakes Reuse Center is the perfect place for this program, program of this magnitude to be coordinated. We also know of the possibility of an impending economic crisis exacerbated by COVID-19. It's possibly headed our way. And the folks who are in reentry and recovery are some of the most vulnerable population in our community and are very susceptible to this economic crisis, which is why we need to put up safeguards for this population. And as my good friend Eric Thomas says, never let a good crisis go to waste. You all have an opportunity to respond to the crisis before we get there. Next, we want to sustain our community vibrancy and safety. And you do that by providing opportunities to succeed, not taking away opportunities and hoping for success. The return on the investment is that we will reduce our carceral footprint in a community that addresses some of the negative consequences of incarceration. These folks will also be paired with volunteers, our interfaith-based reentry friendship network, set to begin working in December. URO, along with other organizations in the community, will be working together with Anise and Diane at the Finger Lakes Reuse Center to ensure that this program does its very best to increase the capacity and skill set of the people in reentry and will continue to pair programming to eliminate gaps and supports and services for this population. Lastly, I'd like to address the criminal justice coordinator position. I was doing work when this criminal justice coordinator position was created out of the CGR report and envisioned getting to that finish line with all those recommendations fulfilled. We have not reached a point in which we can say that those recommendations have been fulfilled. I also don't think it would be fair to have the roles and responsibilities of this work subsumed under another position. The work is very technical and requires specific expertise that has developed over time. When performed at a high level of coordination, this job will easily take 40 hours per week. And if the person who subsumes this role takes this work on, how will they be able to work the other responsibilities that they're supposed to take on?
If you could finish up, Tali.
All right. Lastly, let's see. So in closing, right, this is not just about the budget and amendments to the budget and OTRs. It's about our values, our culture, our lifestyle of love, inclusion, equity, compassion, generosity, and support for those who are the most vulnerable. If we invest in this human capital, we will lift up our entire community. Both of my asks are requiring you all to consider the long-term investment of building up people who have been failed by the educational system, the healthcare system, when you think that 75 to 85% of the folks incarcerated have mental health and co-occurring chemical dependence diagnoses. We need
Thanks, Tom.
All right.
You had an extra dad's minute, I've got to say.
Yeah. They came up bothering me in the middle of it. Say hi.
Hi.
Say hi.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Is that your bedtime?
Yeah. This got jumbled up here, so. But this call was necessary. Thank you guys for the time. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Tali.
Have a good night, Tali.
Thank you.
Dominic, yeah, you said Tali was the last person?
Yes, he was. We've gone through all of the speakers who signed up, and I've captured all the additional comments that I'll follow up with you all via email.
That's wonderful. Thank you very much, Dominic, doing hard work there behind the little black box. We really appreciate it. I want just to let folks know we're continuing to hear comments from everybody. You can come to our legislature meetings and offer public comment at the beginning of those meetings. We also have you can fill out by email to the legislature. Our next expanded budget committee meetings are October 13th and 14th, starting at 4:30. Those will be presentations by department heads. We have a public hearing scheduled November 10th at 7 o'clock, and we really appreciate everybody's comments. This is your money. This is your government, and we deeply appreciate your care and concern for how we use your resources. So with that, thank you to all my colleagues for being on the call. And Jason, thank you for the presentation and all the work that's gone into this and the work to come. Thanks so much, folks.
Good night, everyone.
Stay safe and
good night.
See you soon.